I want for us to consider the parable in which Jesus tells a story. I'm going to call it like workers for the vineyard. It could be like the owner of the vineyard, but we'll do it this way here this morning. To think about the nature of the Lord's kingdom, one aspect of the nature of the Lord's kingdom, which is often puzzling, and has this parable, I think, is more difficult from some than some of the others, in the sense that it's harder for us to read this parable and to think about its point without reading into it some of the subsequent doctrinal debates which have plagued Christianity in its history, and especially some of the current ones various groups may debate about, and especially since I think this parable has a point which may be read in the light of what somebody wants it to mean instead of what the Lord meant by it. So we're going to have to try to dig a little bit and to think about what's going on here. Now, before we read the little story that occurs here, it might be helpful for us to kind of get in our mind the economic situation of the day and the way in which employers went about securing the help needed, especially in the agricultural situations in which the people lived, or which the people found themselves. And I'll try to describe what stands out to me, and if you guys can augment this with details that you remember, then please do so. But the idea first was the purposes of this parable will be situations in which you'd have maybe a great many of the people who would only farm their family plots. They would provide for their families with what we might refer to as a large garden, or what in my part of the country, I never figured this out, but people called it a truck patch. I don't know exactly what that means, but it looked to me like a great big garden. And that was maybe what many of the common families would have relied upon for that, for their families, that plus a few animals of some kind. Their lives would go on with their family sustenance in that way, but there was then also the existence of larger landowners who farmed larger sections of land and then sold the produce in the marketplace in order to sustain families in towns, or families who did not farm, or even the families who did have the large gardens but had to provide extra for them. So these large landowners might raise grain, or they might have vineyards, or they might have olive orchards, or other things like that. Now, the way in which they went about their labor was, if you were a worker who wanted a job, and if you were looking to support your family, you would go to the meeting place, either at the gate of the town or at the I guess what we would call the square, the public center of the town, and the landowners would come there to hire whatever amount of workers they needed for that particular day, and they could negotiate the pay and so forth, and the nature of the work for that day. The normal way of going about it, we've often said in this class, The The going day's wage for an ordinary worker would be what most of the versions now translate a denarius, or a coin, or something that was in use in their day. So the worker would go work in the man's vineyard or field or whatever it was for that day. At the end of the day, the worker, the owner would pay the worker the agreed upon wage. And then, if necessary, the process would go on the next day in a similar way. There wasn't a 40-hour work week in which the worker went on for a longer period of time. If you wanted something like that, then you had you hired a servant of some sort, or you had a bond servant or a steward who would attend to those things for you. So this is the ordinary way to go about daily work. Now, that lays the premise for our story today. And there is a surprise in this story, and in the lesson of the story is that things don't work out like the workers thought they should, not like the owner thought it should. So you have to kind of read it from that perspective. I want for us to read the whole story. I want you to ask yourself, while we read this, what do you think the main point the Lord is trying to get at here is? How would you have understood this this story if you were hearing it? And what details make you think this is the main point of the story? All right. Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16. Dan, are you up to reading that one for us? I need to borrow my bifocals or anything? Okay.
For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. When he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to those he said, "You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you." And so they went. Again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did the same thing. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, "Why have you been standing here idle all day long?" They said to him, "Because no one hired us." He said to them, "You go into the vineyard too." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last group to the first." When those hired about the 11th hour came, each one received a denarius. When those hired first came, they thought that they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they grumbled at the landowner, saying, "These last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day." But he answered and said to one of them, "Friend, am I doing you no wrong? Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go. But I wish to give to this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Or is your eye envious because I am generous?" So the last shall be first, and the first last.
All right. Now, if you put yourself in the shoes of the workers who were hired early in the day, you may feel with them their complaint. If you put yourself in the shoes of the owner who is doing this, you may feel with him in his answer to the complaint. So be aware of that. Now, a little bit about the timing issue. In their practice, the day apparently began at 6 a.m., so the first ones would be hired at that hour. The third hour would be then 9 a.m. The sixth hour would be noon. The ninth hour would be 3 p.m. And the 11th hour would be what? Be 5 then, right? So you can see you got a long day's work here. And if it's work in the vineyard outside in the heat of the day, then you can see it'd be a long day's work, and the accounting that goes on at the end would take place amongst some tired people, all right? What do you think is the main point of this parable when you read it? Okay, Steve.
Jealousy. Trying to kill jealousy.
All right. All right. The it addresses the problem of... So in your view, the main point of this parable takes place in verse 12, really. If you look at it, where what I note when I read it is, these, you and us, the relation of these three groups, these last work only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat. So that contrast, I can see what you're saying, that the teaching against jealousy. Now, please remember that we're going to be comparing, that what we're after is the fact that the kingdom of heaven is like. So what, in that case, would be the point that the Lord is making? What is there about the nature of the kingdom which might relate to what he just mentioned?
Yeah.
Yes, Eddie?
I see that we have a generous God, that if we obey his commandments, whether we obey them for many years or for an entire day or 1 hour or a few years, that the results will be the same, that he will give the reward that he promised to us in his word.
All right, and how would that relate to what he mentioned a minute ago? I think there is a way that we'll talk about. What can anybody say? What else? Do you see any other point from the two that have just been mentioned here that you regard as the main point of this little parable?
Well, the owner has a right.
Okay.
To do what he thinks is best.
All right. The owner. For if it were not for the owner, where would all of them have been?
Unemployed.
All right, they'd all have been unemployed. If they were standing idle in town all day, that would mean not just that they were not working, but what about their families? All right, they're not eating. They have no means of supporting or sustaining themselves and so forth. So the owner... they're dependent on his goodwill and upon his offering them the chance to support themselves in their lives. The owner then, because he's the owner, has the right to ask them what to do, to send them to work in his field, and then to pay them according to agreement, right? Therefore, what relationship exists between the workers and the owners in this parable? What is the need? And what I'm getting at is, when the owner first hired the first group of workers, how much did he promise to pay them? Now look at it.
An denarius for the day.
All right. Let me look a little farther with you then.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. That's the ones I was trying to get at, I think. Then the first group, he promises them the ordinary, the expected wage for the day. This is verse 2. And what I'm thinking about is verse 4. Where he says, you go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right, I will give you. So, what kind of relationship then is required here between the workers and the owner?
Trust.
All right, but not just trust, obedient trust. Do you see that? They go do the work that he sends them to do in keeping with his instruction. After all, he's the owner, with the belief that he'll do right by them when the day is over. Okay? Now, I think that's an important detail in this parable, in this little story. Now, of course, you can see that the difficulty comes in the whatever is right part of this for the subsequent hires. And who decides that? Does the owner decide that, or does, once the workers have been sent into the vineyard, do they somehow now assume the role of authority for what is right for the rest of them? So that's the difficulty that comes up. Now, you can see the end of the day comes. The owner does what? It gives them all the same thing. And I think it is enlightening, at least to me, that in verse 14, he says, I choose to give the last worker as I give to you. The owner regards this as not merely wages, but he is doing something for these families. Why do you think he gives? Why would a man trying to go about business pay in this way? What moved this fellow to do this?
Compassion.
All right. He calls it his generosity, his compassion. In other words, he knows the families need to live, so he is acting with some amount of consideration for the ones who had no other hope in this situation. Now, the problem starts in verse 10. What little phrase stands out to you in verse 10 that is the root for the rest of the difficulty here?
They thought.
That's what I noticed. They thought. All right. Here's the. What did they think then about the pay scale that developed here? They thought it was unfair. Unjust. Was it unfair because they got less than they agreed to work for?
No.
No. It was unfair because they got the same as others that they thought worked less. Have you ever noticed when we compare ourselves to people, we always think that we work harder and they make more. Have you ever noticed that? That's always the way we compare. And there's something human about that I think makes this story ring true. So, believing they've been treated unfairly, what did they do? Verse 11. You talk about being human.
Right.
All right. They grumbled. They grumble against the master of the house, the owner of the place, the employer. So, and notice now he responds to their complaint that is uttered in verse 12, as we read, by pointing out a line of thought to the grumblers here. First, he says, I'm doing you no wrong because you agreed with me to work for this. This is verse 13. Then he says, I'm doing you no wrong because I choose to give the last workers the same amount, and I'm allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me. Verse 14 and 15. And his advice to the ones grumbling is to take what belongs to you and go, and not to begrudge not to let your eye be evil because mine is generous. All right, that's what he's. Don't let this overcome you. And that seems to be the challenge here. Do I think he has the right to do what he will? Am I willing for him then to be to be who he is and to be generous with other people and so forth. That theme now leads to all kinds of further discussion, and I want to try to put it in its context, and I want to ask you what kinds of problems that you see develop from this, okay? First, let's put it in its context. Look at that last statement in verse 16. So the last will be first, and the first last. What turns things upside down is the unexpected generosity of the owner. And the challenge that it brings to us people is whether we think we have done more than others and therefore deserve more than others, and whether we're willing for the generosity of the Lord to turn things upside down. This is a thought that occurs twice more in the broader context here. Go back to the end of chapter 19 for a second. And remember the story of the rich young ruler. A lot of stuff going for him. He'd been living in a way that respected the Lord's commandments, according to his own word. He was in a wealthy position. He was a ruler, and he was young. But when the Lord told him to get rid of what was keeping him from following him and to commit himself all the way, what did the rich young ruler do? All right, he went away sorrowful. He had great possessions. He was not willing to make that kind of commitment. That leads Peter to say at the end of at the end of chapter 19, verse 27. See, he says this to Christ, see, we've left everything and followed you. What then shall we have? I'm suggesting to you the parable that we have read has to be understood in the light of this conversation. Look at verses 28 through 30 at the end of Matthew 19. Jan, would you read that, please?
And Jesus said to them, truly I say to you that you have followed me in the regeneration when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne. You also sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel.
All right, let me stop and just offer a comment here. He's talking about the authority the apostles would have in his kingdom as the one sent to teach the word by which all of us will be judged. That's the idea. Now go ahead, Jan.
And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or farms for my name's sake shall receive many times as much and shall inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first.
All right. Now that last statement in verse 30 and the statement in chapter 20, verse 16, ties these two thoughts together. Do you see that? What the Lord is saying is that no sacrifice made in the interest of following him will be not worth it, if I can use a convoluted sentence that way. That any sacrifice made in the interest of the kingdom of the Lord will be more than worth it. Does that sound like a better way of saying it? All right, that's the idea. We need not fear that we will come out of it with a bad deal. Now, how do I know that whatever I need to sacrifice in the interest of the kingdom will be more than worth it in this life, and that in the world to come it will bring eternal life? How do I know that? All right. So I have no real assurance except trust in the giver of life, do I? I operate by faith in his promise. Now, how did these workers in the vineyard, what assurance did they have that what they did in the vineyard would be worth it.
The promise of the owner.
The promise of the owner. So you see, we're operating on the same principle. We're looking at two sides of the same coin. Peter's question at the end of chapter 19 raised the matter from the perspective of, look, we have made all these sacrifices. We've left everything. Remember, they left the nets, they left their business, they left everything to follow the Lord. What are we going to have? Is it going to be worth it? And the Lord's statement comes here. Now, what will be, humanly speaking, the other side of this discussion will be, but these folks over here haven't made as many sacrifices. They've kept on fishing to make a living. They've kept on working the farm. They've kept on doing that. What will they have? This comes up at the end of Gospel of John, where it looks like John and Peter are present with the Lord, and Peter wants to know, the Lord tells Peter, feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. And Peter looks at John and says, what will this man have? And the Lord says, you follow me. You know, so I get that idea out of this a little bit. So look on over with me for a second now in chapter 21. I think this may be related, and he tells a little story of two sons. Well, I think it'd be good if we read this, verses 28 through 32. And 31 and 32 are the two verses that I really want you to see as the broader context for our story here. Tim, do you mind to read that section, please?
So what do you think? A man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, son, go work today in the vineyard. And he answered, I will not. But afterward he regretted it and went. The man came to the second and said the same thing, and he answered, I will, sir. But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father?
All right, stop there a second. What's the answer?
The one who did.
The one who said, I won't, but changed his mind and did. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
They said, the first. Jesus said to them, truly I say to you that the tax collectors and prostitutes will get into the kingdom of God before you. For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax collectors and prostitutes did believe him. And you, seeing this, did not even feel remorse after so as to believe him.
All right, they didn't change their... They said, I go, and then they went not. In other words, you see that idea. Can you see that little story in relation to Jesus' principle, so the last will be first and the first last? That's an illustration of what he's talking about and how that applies. So can you think of another parable, another famous, well-known parable, which teaches the same idea from the perspective of one of the participants in the story?
Prodigal.
Exactly. And who in the story of the prodigal? The older brother, who says, I've stayed here, I've worked in the field, I've done everything, and you've never given me a kid, a goat that I can have a party with my friends. He feels all mistreated because he's been living in his father's house. And I think that idea is here in this story. The idea is that we should obediently trust what the Master tells us in his goodness, that he'll do right. And that we should not busy ourselves with evaluating whether the Master is being fair to us and what he gives to someone else. The way we evaluate him is whether he does what he says he will do toward us, right?
Yes.
I think that idea is important. Now, give me, if you can think of ways in which you can see that this story in Matthew 20 might be taken and mistreated. It might be used to make some other point than this point about trusting obedience to this owner being worth it.
Some won't serve until they think
their life's
about
to. Alright, that would be one. The Lord is not saying here, although he's saying, if I want to give what is needed to someone who has not been employed all day, I have that right. He's not advising us here to wait as long as we can. We think we can squeak by without it before we ever act on the Lord's will for our lives. He's not advising that kind of delay or irresponsibility at all. That would be one mistreatment. Can you think of any other abuses of this story or the wrong uses of this story that might be possible? Let me bring it up this way. I have heard it, I've read suggestions about the use of this story, which I think abuse the principle of the grace of God. There is the idea here that you can't teach people that we need to listen to the authority of the Lord and to obey Him because God is gracious and He can do whatever He wants to do. And if He wants to save someone without their obeying the gospel, or if He wants to save someone, fill in the blank, then He's free to do so. Of course, God is God. But because He's God, He'll act consistently with His own nature and with His own promise. The master in this story acted consistently with His own promises and His own commitment. He did what He did because of the generous person He was. We shouldn't use this passage then in seeking an excuse, to excuse ourselves from obeying what we know the Lord wants us to do. I think that would be taking it out of its setting and out of its context. What kind of a tone of life for citizens of the kingdom of Christ would this parable suggest or call for? Say it, Ruth.
We're equal.
All right. First, the one in which we avoid jealousy and envy. That would be one key thing. A key aspect of that, I would think, would be gratitude for what we've been given. Gratitude for what we personally have been given is an essential part of the Christian life. A third thing would be for all of us to busy ourselves with what we can find that the Lord has given us to do. To engage ourselves in activity in His service that such as we find open to us and find ourselves able to do, and to do it with trust that the Lord, I like Hebrews 6, where He's not unrighteous to forget our ministry and our service to Him. But he doesn't let love and service in His behalf go unrewarded in the long term. I'd say it that way. And Hebrews 6 makes that point. Anybody else with the thought based on this little story? I've gone to the last part of this faster than I meant to. Gene?
I'm as good as they are, so I'm as good as they are, so
now we begin, anytime we begin to compare ourselves with ourselves or with each other, we're on the wrong track. The point here is the owner and our relationship to the owner and not the other workers and our relationship to the other workers. So that's important. Anybody else?
Patience. Being patient.
All right, be patient. And be patient with people, I would say. That's a big part of the idea here.
I think if we're saying it's kind of
What part about verse 8?
The fact that he took the people that he paid, the people that came last first.
All right. That turns out to be a big detail in this story. If he had paid the first ones first, maybe they'd never known what the last ones got. I wonder why he did it this way. Maybe to illustrate that he can be trusted to be good. Maybe that's it. Okay? All right. Appreciate everybody being with us. I hope this is the beginning of a good week. Y'all remember the good old days when we were complaining about how cool it was in August?